So welcome. This is Hacking Influence. That's what it says on the schedule. Actually, it's Fixing Influence. At least I tried. And this is a personal story. It's about how you can really, really, really fuck up social engineering if you're a social engineer. So the previous talk was Jeroen, and he said, well, okay, it's TLP Red. I don't want this out there, taken out of context or any other way. And I decided to just go for it, and we'll see what happens. So there is actually another TLP Red in another room at this moment, so that's why this is, well, okay, but I'm proud of you guys that you are here, so thank you for that. So this is me. I've been using this slide for a while because I really like the picture, and it tells you about my name, what I do. I'm a hacker, I'm a speaker, I'm a social engineer, and I'm doing this podcast with some friends, Angry Nerds, but I'm not an influencer. And it's a bit strange if you're a social engineer and you're telling people you're not an influencer. Of course, it's a joke. In Angry Nerds, we always tell people we're not influencers because we have, what, 700 subscribers, and I know guys that have several millions. We're not in that range, and we don't want to be because it's a niche and we like it. But we also, we don't try to influence people. That's not what we do. I don't know, is Gerard in the room? I've been talking to Gerard Jansen, he's a writer, and he told me some things about stories. And he said, well, if you're writing stories, and I was thinking of writing a book, very ambitious, that's a lot of work, I found out. So probably there will be a book someday, but it's not the 11th of September, or maybe even next 11th of September. This book will actually appear somewhere, and I'll keep you posted when it actually, you know. So there's only a few people know where what that's about, right? Or you just shutting up to be polite, right? I don't really have the time to do that right now, but it's something that I really want to do one day. So to prepare for that, I went to Gerard and said, okay, how do you write a book? And he said, well, you need a good point to be made. There has to be a single point in your book, in your story. There also has to be a clear protagonist. Who is this about? And some books, they're full of people with different roles, and there's all kinds of stories woven together, and they're very complicated, and they're fun to read. But a good story has one protagonist, and he goes on a journey. And the journey changes the protagonist in some way. Hopefully in a good way, because you learn stuff along the way. So that's what happened to me. And this is a very personal talk, so in that sense. So in order to learn a very important lesson, in most stories, the protagonist fucks up several times. And so did I. That's why I considered making this a TLP Red. Well, okay, I decided to be brave and just be out here with that. The question that I got was, how could that be? How could you fuck up influence? You know how to influence people. You get stuff done, and you talk to people, and it just goes your way. Because you're a social engineer, you know how to do that. But there's a little theory behind that. Social engineering is something that I do for a job, for a living, for a pen test, for any situation in which it's called for. And I'm trying to do it as little as possible in my regular life with the people that are around me. I'm not that kind of person. I know people who do that, but I'm not that kind of person. So I'm very reluctant to search for the boundaries and maybe even cross them between influence and manipulation. Did I talk about that in previous talks? Influence is the good way to steer people in the right. It's like bringing up children, or you try to get them, you lead them down a path. So that's influence. We all do that. But manipulation is the dark side, same coin. You lead people down another path, which is not in their interest. So I'm very, very reluctant to go near that border, and I don't want to do that. Of course, I'm trying to help people and give them advice, but it shouldn't be feeling as social engineering. So that's the problem. On my work, and let's just make it a fictitious job, where there was some team formed, and this team was about cybersecurity. And I was, okay, I can do that. That's cool. I'll join that team. And I was one of the few people, because it was really, really early stage. There were four or five people only in the team, and three of them were managers. And so they had me as one hacker, and there was another guy that did some arranging all the stuff we needed to do. So kind of a janitor, concierge, he took care of stuff. So this was the team. It was very small, and I started giving my advice at these guys. Okay, you know, what we should do is we should build this, and we should build this, and go to conferences, and we should build a network, and we should, there were a lot of advices. And they were good advice. There were things that I learned in this community, and there is a lot of very smart people in here. So I thought, well, these advices, they are very good. I went to school for this, I studied all this, and I think it's solid. And they didn't really listen, because there were three managers, and one guy that, yeah, I said, well, okay, I'll arrange that for you, but I don't get what this is all about. So we started growing and expanding. And because of the salary that went with being in the cybersecurity team, they hired more managers. Because there was a salary, so you need, okay, well, you need to make this kind of money, so you can't be on the execution side of things, right? So you need, okay, we'll get more managers. So after a while, there were, I think, 40 managers and two hackers. And those hackers were very, very busy fixing biases which were infected in weird ways. And we had to go and perform some party tricks for important people and show them all kinds of demos. And it was kind of fun, but it was very, very busy. And all these managers were like, yeah, well, you know, we'll go and do that. And I thought, that is a ridiculous idea, but okay, let's talk about that. And some of these managers, they knew me, and they said, well, you're not going to social engineer me. I said, well, that's not what this is about. I'm trying to get a point across. So please look at my previous work. Trust me, I'm an engineer, right? I am. So look at my previous work. Look at my resume, look at all the stuff. Dude, this is the best way to go, really. There's a lot of slides here, so. Which ended up to be, dude, really? And that kind of pissed me off. And that's a weak spot with me. I get pissed off pretty easily when I think, oh, guys, Jesus, really, really, and yeah, I get grouchy, and I'm turning into a grumpy old hacker. I see some of them here, so I'm applying. This is my job interview to join the grumpy old hackers. But when you get grumpy, you get all kinds of emotions. You get frustration. You get incomprehension. What's this about, guys? Are we still on the same page? Is this the route we're taking? Is this what we want to do? And it turned out that we had completely different ideas, and I couldn't get them convinced to walk the right way, because you keep checking, and okay, maybe I'm wrong, you know, but no, I checked here and I checked there, and this is really what we should do right now, because all the other things are, yeah, non-productive. Let's keep it very polite. So there was even some anger and alienation from the rest of the team, because I turned into a really crumpy old hacker and tried, oh, come on, dude. Point is, that works both ways. And that's the hard lesson that I learned, because all these emotions with me were also present on the other side. And what happens then, people stop listening altogether, no matter how good your story is. So that was pretty messed up. For people who, when I built this slide, I thought these arrows, were crooked. They're not properly aligned. I don't know if you guys can see that, but I thought, well, that looks ridiculous. So for the people here who are like me, I've put this around it, it is really okay. So they are the same, but it looks weird, right? Okay, so this other side, you could try your best and lose the upper arrow with your frustration and fear of guys were going the wrong way, and even your anger and your alienation, and you try to reach out. But that other arrow is a persistent son of a bitch. People will remember that for years. So when you go and apply for another job in that team or another team, people will know you and they talk. And that has been haunting me for years. Okay, after a while, you find your peace, you turn 50, you think, okay, it's fine, nothing is on fire, you do you, I'll do me. So that's why I did. I left this altogether. I have tried to fix it. I've been wondering, is this fixable at all? No, it's not, because of the other arrow. That is really persistent, because people keep talking. And as long as there's people there that were there at the beginning, they will tell all the others, and it's like all the monkeys in the zoo. Okay, well, this is how we do it. We don't really know why, but you're an asshole. Seen that theory something. So now what? And I've been reading about it. I've been reading books and how does influence work on that level? If you don't want to social engineer guys, if you don't want to use all kinds of magic and tricks to get them to do what you want, but you really want to build some influence with them, the positive way. It's all about perception. And there is some good books about this perception. I've been reading a few of them, and the fun part is they don't really agree with each other. There's some differences, but that doesn't really matter. It's about the same topic, and it's about the same substance, but it's some talk about 7 levels, some about 3 or 4, some about it, but it's basically the same. So I'll just tell you guys what version I learned. And there is a level 0. Level 0 is the guys that don't show up. Because it's all perception, right? It's how they see you as a person. So a level 0 person, you don't want to be a level 0 person. Guys that don't show up, mess up their work, be late, whatever they can mess up. And guys, as referred to by Chantal and Nancy in their talk, there's just assholes that can't keep their hands to themselves or mess up in some other way, but they're basically assholes. You don't want them. So this is level 0. A good example is the guy that fixed our bathroom a few years ago. And we got to know this guy. He had this nifty little van with all the right commercial stickers and all. So we thought, well, that looks good. It's professional. It's not just an old van with stickers on it and I am Bob the Builder. No, it looked very, very professional. And he was working with our neighbors and we said, okay, well, we need this bathroom fixed. Could you do that? He said, well, yeah, that's 10,000 euros without looking at the bathroom first. And I said, well, okay, it needs to be completely redone because it's very, very old and the tiles are coming off and it's maybe 50 years old. So what we want is very simple. We need a modern functioning bathroom. Sometimes that's hard. So he got to work. And the first day he was there on time. And he started breaking stuff and getting everything out. And the next day he was late. But he went upstairs and he continued his work. And after a while, he started just leaving in the afternoon and coming back later, and he was gone for hours, but still sending bills. And the work was also not great. Some of you might have seen pictures I took of it was really, really bad. This was a guy, he had this pipes coming in through the wall from the heating system, and it came in like here, and the heater was like there, and he decided, well, this will fit. And of course, that's ridiculous, because it looks like shit, and it doesn't really work. Also, the heater was so close to the ceiling that the little air fan was on top. I could not get a key in between air, and these were the smallest of the problems. So this guy was definitely a level zero. And also he was an asshole. So when we started complaining, like, dude, this is not okay, right? We should talk about this, we should solve this. He went like full attack mode. But yeah, but you guys, and I don't feel welcome here, and you are assholes basically yourself, and I don't have to be here if I don't want to, bye-bye. So, well, we got a judge involved, and that went out, that went very well. So it all went fine after a lot of work. You don't want this level zero guy around you. So any of you guys, do you think I will call him again someday? Or ask for his advice on anything? That was kind of an eye-opener for me as well. Oh yeah, no, that's level zero. So level one, it's the lowest acceptable level. This guy's just showing up, doing the work. Yeah, it's done, it works. And it's kind of fine. They're not the first page in your Rolodex, right? But you know that they get their stuff fixed and it's okay. That's the level one. Would you ask those guys for advice on anything? Or call them, really? They're not on top of your list, right? However, they show up on time, mostly. They behave correctly, do a decent job. It's level one. Then there's this medium acceptable level. Level two, guys that always show up in time, do a very good job, actually, and it's really nice to have them. They're friendly, accommodating, and they have some aftercare and service. So if you call them and you say, look, this is not, I have this with my car now. I had a very, very large repair earlier last year, August, September, something like that. Very, very large repairs. And they also fixed the heater. Well, it broke again. And that's not a problem, because I can just call them and say, okay, this heater, it's, and it tell me to, yo, just come over. We'll look at it, we'll fix it, we'll get it done. There's no problem. So this is level two. And by the way, they did a fine job with the car. I mean, it works. This is where it gets a bit interesting, the high acceptability level, but there is no influence yet here. These are guys that are communicative, they show up, it's all fine, and they help you out with your problem. So these are the guys that sit with you, look at the problem together and say, okay, look, if you do it this way, it might be even a little more expensive, but it's way better. This will greatly improve the quality of your stuff. That's level three. It's not the guys that you really call for advice, but in Dutch we call it blijvertje. You put them in your Rolodex with a nice green tick on it, and you say, oh, this guy, we should call him the next time something breaks. It's not the guy you go to for any advice, but mostly they do little extras and they have the service, and it's fine. And then there's level four. Notice that I'm going really fast, by the way. I don't need a full hour for this. And this is where influence starts to really happen. This is the preferred partner. This is the guy that really surprises you. When they do something, you go like, okay, this is interesting. We have one of those guys. He was working on the roof of our neighbor's house. And all our houses are, you know, we're in this little Dutch row altogether. He was working with our neighbors and fixing the roof, doing some things there. And he rings our doorbell and says, look, you have all these solar panels there. And I saw that, and it's not really safe. I don't know who installed it, but I fixed some of the connectors there and the little clips that keep them on there. He said, well, they were loose, and he took some pictures and he showed them and said, I took care of that for you, and there's no charge, but just know that you should call someone to have that looked at. Okay, guess who we called for that? The same guy, right? So, okay, well, if that's what you've seen, and if that's the case, then we could verify that, of course, because, it's a good sales pitch as well. So, is this really true? And we verified it, and it was actually true, and he really did some fixing, which we were very happy about, because a few weeks later, there was a pretty heavy storm, and all our solar panels are still there, so way to go. So now we're negotiating a contract with him to just get the entire solar system and fix it and do the maintenance and to do all the stuff that needs to be done on the roof, because that's where he works mostly, on roofs, fixing stuff. And this guy is really on top of our Rolodex. If there is anything on that roof, we need to have someone go up there with all kinds of tools and maybe a little elevator to get there with stuff. And this is the guy we call. And this is also the guy that we would take advice from if he would, for instance, say, well, I see that the solar panels are getting old, or, you know, you should change something in that system. I would believe this guy. I would go with it. And what I say here is they help improving, not just fixing. So they have some way of steering you the right way. I wish I would have known this very early on. And then there's the guru level. These are guys, they are a legend of their own. Their work is so outstanding, so good, that you don't even need to have been in contact with them. This goes by word of mouth. And there is a lot of influence going on there. Down there I wrote carte blanche. It's not always the case, but this is what I see. Guys like this, they come in and people say, okay, I need this fixed, just get it done. Yeah, do you want to, you want me to calculate all the costs? No, just get it done. I'm sure you find something and you'll get it. So they don't just keep the agreement and keep the contract. Most of the times, these guys help create the contract and the agreement. And that's the level of influence that really works. So these guru guys, as I said, you don't really have to know them. They pop up when you talk to other people and say, well, this was outstanding work. This was great. And it's a great guy, by the way, and he had all these great ideas. I don't remember if I read it or heard it, but there was a woman, she had this basement, and there was some leakage there, and there was some other stuff that needed to be fixed. And way back in the basement, she had her washing machine and her dryer. And this guy was working there, and yeah, of course, he had all these really big lights to light up the basement and just do his work. And as he finished up, he took all the lights out, and he did one final check and thought, whoa, it's dark in here, right? So he called this lady and said, okay, well, look, I'm not trying to sell you anything, but have you considered putting up a light near the washing machine? Because it's all the way in the back. It's very dark there. And, of course, I can see it's workable, but this would really help you out. And she said, yeah, okay, do it. And at almost no charge, that guy fixed the light in the back of the basement, and she was really, really happy about it, so started telling all the friends, like, oh, this guy was here to fix some pipe and some leakage, but he also did the electricity for that light back there, and it's great. So next time you have something, just call him. This is the handyman of choice. And this light fixture, it was not in any agreement, or there was just, it wasn't there. There was no case. So he just proposed that, and she went along with it. So this is a good example of, well, you do it. I know your work is good, just do it. So now what? And I think this is about the last slide, so I'm really rushing through this. You don't mind, right? We can do some questions as well, so that's good. So influence is not about what you think is right. And it's not even about what you know is right. Even if you do all the research in the world and you are very, very, very right, that's not what influence is about, because people just won't listen if you're not on one of the topmost levels. Level 4, level 5, that's when people start listening to you. So it's about perception, and I learned that the hard way. Even if they're completely wrong. That's another story, but it works even if they have this halo effect with you, and oh, you're the guy to go to, and they're completely wrong. You're full of shit, actually, but it still works. So maybe I'll do that next year, how to deal with that. So, questions, guys? Yeah?
Let's say you have
flying microphone.
Okay, so let's say you have, for example, you arrive somewhere where you need to...
do some work?
Yeah, do some work, change some processes, and there are influencers who are seen as a very high level, but they are hindering that process, and they are hindering you basically building up influence without going directly against them and then screwing yourself over.
Yeah, that's basically what happened in the beginning of the story. There was a lot of guys there, and you know, everyone lies on his resume. So I'm the greatest. Yeah, just hire me. You need managers, right? I'm the greatest manager. You know? We'll go that way. And you, as a technician or an engineer, you know, well, that's the wrong way, actually. And you go head to head with them, and that's exactly the wrong way to do it. So a better approach would be to just do your job, do it very well, and show off the results to the guys in charge, and tell them, look, I have more ideas if you like, and try to get to one of those levels. And I just totally skipped that step and went full on, as I know I can do, and that totally fucked up everything, so don't do that.
Thank you.
Any more?
Did you consider leaving and working somewhere else?
I did, actually, yeah. First I went to another team, which was a big improvement, doing something totally different. And I've been doing that for several years. After that, I looked back and thought, okay, well, I could maybe there's 5-6 years passed, so maybe I could rejoin. There's all kinds of new people there, and let's try. And that big arrow was still there. It's very, very persistent. So people talk, and you know, even when you apply to go back to the old function, they see your resume and your name, and say, oh, we know that guy. No, don't do that. And of course, that's very, it feels unjust, right? Because you do your best and you try to get everyone the right way, the right direction, and you try to help, and you try your best, and that's the most frustrating part of all, because you're really, really trying, and the harder you try, the harder you fail in this case. So that's nasty.
How can you evaluate how other people are viewing you? How can you tell if someone thinks you're a level 2, 4, 5?
Well, that starts to border social engineering, because we have, of course, in social engineering, we have some techniques to look at how people view your ways and your points of view. But you should try to get little things first. You just try to, and don't, it's like Aikido. You know, Aikido is always, the harder you go in, the harder you fall, because these guys, you just drop to the floor. So you should first try and you know, I have a little suggestion. Maybe next week we could do this and this. And if you see there's a positive response in it, okay. Then you just take that little job and you do it very good. And you do another suggestion, but a little bigger. And so you try to find your way like that and just probe, like, okay, how far are they willing to follow me in this? But you have to really be outstanding in everything you do to prove that you are on the right track. So keep proving and proving and proving yourself, which is very hard work. But it's unfortunately the only way.
And stay ethical, obviously.
Of course you should. Yeah, you should always stay ethical. That was the big problem. And that's a paradox, because I stayed ethical, this kind of dropped from my hands. I could have turned it around, but that would not have felt right for me.
Hi. So it sounds like if you mess up, it's quite easy to get stuck at a certain level of perception.
Yeah.
Are there any back doors or procedures that one could initiate so that you could restore this, like, external perception, but also the confidence of other people that you work with in you?
It's very hard once you get to that the errors you saw there, because your emotions become their emotions. And you get frustrated and you go head to head with them, and that's the wrong way to go. Of course, there's tricks to get around it, but that's what I just said. It's not really ethical. It's a very, very slow process if you want to try and fix it, but most of the time, it's a lot of energy for maybe the wrong wrong purpose.
Comes down to hard work and proving yourself over and over again.
And well, not really improving, because with this story, the base premise is that you are competent already, and you are right, and you are doing the study and the work, and you're trying to get them to see that. But the problem is trust, and trust is very hard to regain.
Would you have any suggestions? One way to show that you're competent is to go like, see, I know that would happen, and then rubbing their noses in it. That's not going to make you any friends.
No.
Is there a
I tried that. No, doesn't
way.
No.
Is there a way to do that that would actually be to your benefit?
What I've tried a few times, but that also backfired, was talking to some guys on basically the same level as I was, and I have this great idea. Let's try this. And I said, well, yeah, okay, let's try that. And they worked it out, and they wrote it down. I was like, okay, if they come and present the idea, they have credits. So maybe we'll go that way. And what happened was they sold it as their idea and got even bigger. So that, well, yeah, you have to be careful with that. But, of course, with those guys, I grew in perception. Because, that was a good idea, but now it's mine.
Yeah.
So that's messed up as well.
People, the hardest problem. Thank
you. Yeah. They're not only the weakest link, they're only also the meanest link.
Yeah, no, I think the one thing that did strike me there was sort of a bit of a lack of psychological safety between, like, leadership and the technical there. And I think in any company where that's sort of happening, you're getting to a stage where management is maybe not even listening to the technical layer as the experts.
Yes.
I think definitely when it gets to that level, then it's maybe not so much an influence problem as it is, like you rightly stated, a perception thing. And once you get to that level, you almost want the management to learn the lesson that people are not actively going out to do their worst. That would be stupid to assume.
And you won't let it burn, because that's also not ethical. So you try to save the things that need saving. And okay, you put out that fire there, and they say, "Well, you see, it was no problem." So that's one thing. On the other hand, with management, you're not fighting management directly. You're fighting all the marketeers that try to influence the management. And these marketeers are professionals, and they use well, let me say, unethical means to get there, and I don't want to use unethical means, so that I'm always behind from that standpoint.
Yeah.
Hi. If I'm understanding correctly, to build trust, you may have to do something that you might not agree with. If I'm understanding correctly, that's at least a situation I might run into.
That would be a possible situation.
Yeah. How do you motivate yourself to do something that you fundamentally disagree with?
That depends. If it's something that I morally disagree with, I don't do it. I just don't do it at all. It's okay. This is not ethical. I'm not going there. I'm very clear at that. But if it's something it's bullshit, but okay, let's go. Good example would be team building. We were very, very busy at that time, and we needed to fix demos, and we needed to prepare for this and for that. And there was this manager, she said, okay, next week we'll go team building. And I was like, oh, that is, no. And he said, well, could you take up the team building part and just arrange for us that we can go somewhere? And I was like, yeah, I think this is a very bad idea, but okay, I'll do it anyway. I can't stop you with this. The best thing I can do is just show you that, okay, let's do it this way then, and try to go with the flow and get something out of that team building. And what I got out of it eventually was that we, at the team buildings, of course, there's always evenings when you get back and you are tired and you go back to your hotel, because we were in a hotel, and then people start talking and drinking and drinking and talking and more drinking. And that is a very good conversational environment. You can't really do business there, because that would also be unethical. But you can get closer to people and get to know each other and build trust that way. And that's what I did there. So just try to find something that could work for you, in, even if it's a shitty situation. Okay. Okay. Right. Right. Any more? No. Well, then we have an early talk, right? Thanks.
Thank you.